whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. And today we're going to start the show a little bit differently than we typically would on a Thursday. Often on Thursdays, we let you hear pretty much straight away from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt. And we'll still let you hear from them throughout the show, and specifically at 6 o'clock in our pick 6 at 6. But, Anthony, I thought that we would start the show today by doing something that we've never done before, which is to revisit an old first and 10. Because it's rare. Like, we get rematches. And maybe this is something that if we like it, we can do it next year on the divisional games where we play teams a second time, or when the Commanders play teams a second time. But as we work into this wild card weekend, where the Commanders are going to take on the Buccaneers, the team that they faced in week one, I thought, what better way to try to go back and remember what we actually talked about week one than going back and looking at the notes? And I write out the first and 10, so we didn't have to even go like transcribe it or anything. We just go back and look at the list. So I say that's what we do to start the show today.
Hey, look, I'm with it, man. And guess what, Craig? We're 3-0 in rematch games. Just saying.
Look at the stats that Anthony Haney is bringing to the program. Well, let's see what's relevant, because I think there's some stuff that's relevant and some stuff that's going to be not quite as relevant. And in fact, the first one, Anthony, and we can go full effects here. You ready?
Number one.
Ooh. The first thing that I wrote down is, because remember, this was a loss. So I go, we're going to need to multitask all year long. We need to be able to evaluate games as they are and in the context of the larger project at hand here. Realistically, this game, not good for both. The stated goal for the short term is to establish a play style, play fast, play physical, communicate well. That wasn't good enough, which is something Dan Quinn would admit. I think looking back, that's not a bad observation. And luckily, like, that's something that we've had to do a little bit less of. We've been able to look at games a little bit more as they are. But I think we've also done a good job of multitasking and saying, like, yeah, no, the receiving talent maybe hurt a little bit here. Or next year when they have a better corner two or whatever. Like, a lot of the problems they've had this year have been areas where we say, hey, they'll work on that long term, and that's okay. It's understandable why they have that. But I think the other thing is, like, on the play style front, that was an issue week one. It basically hasn't been an issue since week three. I think the offensive line, they want to be a little bit more physical. Defensive line, they probably want to be a little bit more physical as time goes on. But generally speaking, like, they show up, they hit people. The missed tackles that were a huge issue in week one have not been an issue. They're the fifth best tackling team in the league by most metrics. So I think that overall, like, good observation. And luckily, Anthony, part of the reason that they've gone 12-5 and 12-4 since week one is because some of that stuff changed.
Yeah, definitely a lot of it changed. And I think week one is also just a tough game to, like, evaluate, just because you don't have a lot of tape on these teams. You know, people come in with different schemes, different philosophies, and things of that nature. So I think also when you factor that in, you got to credit some of that to, like, I guess, the loss. And then also, we had a whole bunch of, like, moving pieces, moving parts.
Oh, we're going to get
there. Their first game playing together.
For sure, we're going to get there. The second thing, though, I said.
Number two.
There we go. The second thing. It was also more big picture. I made a joke about how they have finished Fridays and they did not have a finished Sunday. Because on third downs in that game, they were horrendous. And part of it was penalties. Like, the first third down of the game is a 3rd and 1 where they force an incompletion on a fade to Mike Evans, and Cleveland Furrell picks up a silly hands to the face penalty. He and the offensive lineman, I think it was Tristan Wirfs, just get, you know, they're mashing each other, and Furrell's hands slip up and pop dude in the helmet, and it's a first down. There's a couple others that are first downs on penalty. Then there's a ton of conversions. And so I think Tampa was really aggressive on third down and took advantage of some stuff with Washington, and they just didn't finish drives. They also didn't finish sacks. They got a ton of pressure on Baker in that game, and they did not sack him very many times, if at all. So they have got to make sure that when you collapse the pocket against Mayfield, you don't give him anywhere to go because he is real slippery in the pocket, and he's also actually the seventh leading rusher in terms of scrambling yardage by quarterbacks this year. Of course, Jaden is number one, but Baker's seventh. So he'll run on you, he'll squirm around in the pocket and dart a ball down the field on you. And so between sometimes that was the cause of both, like why he would do that on a third down. But then offensively, they also just didn't finish on third downs. And that was a huge, huge key in that game. And they've obviously been much better since then, but they've also had their moments, I think, since then.
Yeah, and I think Joe Witt, and we'll hear from him later today, but he just talked about Baker just always, you know, keeping the play alive. And sometimes when he's scrambling to throw as opposed to just take off. So
his, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. His outside the pocket numbers this year.
Crazy.
Are like truly historic levels of good. Let me pull this up real quick because this is worth the slight delay here on the old radio. We want to search the term outside. There we go. Baker Mayfield completed 34 of his 47 passes outside the pocket for 406 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 1 interception this season. Good for the highest completion percentage on such passes in a season in the next-gen stats era. So I believe that's back to either 2016 or 2018. It might even go further back than that. So he is 72% outside the pocket. He threw outside the pocket on just 10% of his attempts this season, the fourth lowest rate in the NFL. So when he gets outside the pocket, or he doesn't always like do this. It's just when he does, he's deadly. The Commanders allowed the fifth lowest completion percentage and the fourth fewest yards per attempt on passes thrown from outside the pocket this season. So the Commanders have done a good job when guys get outside the pocket of plastering, of applying pressure, of doing the things you got to do to bring that number down. But Baker has been an absolute killer when he gets outside the pocket. And he's really good, again, maneuvering within the pocket. So that finish of can you actually finish sacks, like that's a huge one on top of the other ways you need to finish plays in this game. And then my third takeaway.
Number three.
From week one's edition of First and 10, as we look back at that game and see what's still relevant on this one, I wrote down, I have not lost faith in the plan because I still trust the people in charge. I can't say I expect a bunch of stuff to happen, watch it happen, then be like, oh my God, how did that happen? Which, again, like I think that's actually applied a lot more than you might first realize because they were 0-1 and we're thinking like, man, this might be a rough season on the old wins and losses. And they went 12-5. But I think often when we would get really frustrated with this team, my question would be, Anthony, how often did we get frustrated with stuff that we didn't see coming? Right? Most of the frustration is like, hey, Benjamin St. Juice can't cover number one wide receivers. And it's like, yeah, no kidding. It's, hey, Nick Allegretti is not the best guard in the NFL. Like, okay, got it. I don't feel like there was a ton after like week three. And there's one guy in particular in Terry McLaurin who the first couple weeks was pretty frustrating. And there's been a couple of times this year where he gets lost in the game and you're just like, where is 17? And I'll talk a little bit more about him next in the context of what's changed between week one and now. But by and large, I think a lot of the stuff that we've been frustrated with at times this year through the winning, which there has been way more than the losing, has been stuff we predicted. So, like, honestly, that's kind of played out the way I thought in a lot of ways. And I think we've, on this show at least, we've done a good job of being like, only so much you can do in 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the questions that we had, you know, Forbes, Jamin, some of the guys that, you know, necessarily aren't here now, they've sort of kind of been answered, and we've been forced to make changes, and that change has us, you know, in a good position to go down to Tampa and really, you know, challenge these guys again. So I'm looking forward to it.
For sure. All right, when we get back, we'll roll through the rest of them. A lot more of the 4 through 10 on these, Anthony, were personnel related. So we'll get to talk about a lot more players, a lot less philosophy, if you will, next. We're looking back at week one against Tampa to see what's still relevant as we head into week one of the playoffs against Tampa on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5 p.m., Melissa Stark, sideline reporter for Sunday Night Football on NBC, will join us. Of course, she was on the sidelines for Washington and Atlanta Sunday night when the Commanders clinched, and she'll be there again this weekend in Tampa with Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth on the call for the Commanders' wild card playoff bout against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Our pal Dan Bazzuta previews the entirety of Wild Card Weekend coming up with us in about 12 minutes or so from right now. Never read the comments. A good one today at 5:30. So we got a bunch of great stuff coming up on the show. Right now, though, we are working through the first and 10 from earlier in the season. If you don't listen typically on Mondays, first and 10 is the segment we do in the first segment of the show. First segment, 10 observations. And so what did we write down, slash what did I write down, about this Tampa-Washington matchup in week one that we find still relevant here in the wild card weekend, week one of the playoffs?
Number four.
The fourth thing I wrote down, Anthony, was in the short term, a lot of what we saw was expected. The corners struggled against great wide receivers, and young talent that was worth seeing against two all pros, you know, how they do. The answer was not great in Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice. We needed more from the non-Terry McLaurin wide receivers, and it was harder for Jaden Daniels to read a Todd Bowles defense than it was for him to read the vanilla defense that he saw in the preseason. I actually also made a pretty funny note, which is to say that I want players to play more in the preseason next year. Please remind me of this next preseason. So a lot of what happened week one, although it's not great and it wound up being wholly unindicative of what this team became, I think was pretty expected. I think we've kind of covered most of that ground, or we're about to when we get into the individual guys.
Number five.
I did think the preseason note was kind of funny, though. Remind me next year. I like preseason football. All right. So we don't need to spend a ton of time on this because this guy is not relevant anymore. But it is a big story of the season. Emmanuel Forbes. I had made a note before he wound up getting benched in this game that he wasn't playing hard enough, that he wasn't as aggressive in tackling, that he wasn't doing the things that they asked him to do, the Dan Quinn play style. And it's why he ultimately got benched, Anthony, and it's why he ultimately got cut. And I think it's important to remember that when we watch this team struggle and feel like they're a corner, if not two corners short, they, I don't want to say they didn't have a choice, but they made the extraordinarily worthwhile and easy to explain calculation that the first round pick from last year was worth seeing if they could coach up. Turns out he wasn't. And then they ultimately trade for Marshon Lattimore, which is kind of the Forbes replacement. And then we'll see how he does. And they'll obviously try to find another corner, I would think, this offseason, try to kick Mikey back inside. But so much of what the consternation about the cornerback position and them ultimately having to use a resource in a third-round pick and the other, you know, pieces involved in that trade to get Marshon Lattimore come from Emmanuel Forbes' failure here in D.C. And boy, was it on display week one.
Yeah. Just thinking back to like the Forbes experience, man, it's, man, did Ron get that wrong? He got it wrong, man.
Well, it's funny because like in the comments, maybe we'll get to some of these and never read the comments today. Some people are like, man, after watching Michael Davis, why did they cut Forbes? And I'm like, because he was worse. Like people just keep wanting to say that the guy that the Commanders put out there is the worst corner they've ever seen. And I'm like, I know it's not good, but like y'all have, your memories are that long, some of you guys. Because the funniest thing is the people who like don't have a memory that's 4 centimeters long and respond to those comments and are like, yeah, okay, Davis can't cover. Forbes couldn't cover or tackle. Or like, you know, hey, BSJ is terrible. It's like Davis can't cover. Like at least BSJ does some good stuff. It's so funny to watch these people just like have a competition to see who can be the most flagrant in their comments torching the Commanders' DBs. And unfortunately, those aren't the only people torching the Commanders' DBs, which brings us to
number six
and BSJ. And a very interesting quote from Dan Quinn after the game. So as a reminder, in this game, BSJ largely played a pretty good game, but in the true BSJ fashion, gave up a couple of really big plays. He gave up 2 touchdowns to Mike Evans on 2 fade routes where he's in fantastic position and the ball just seemingly goes through him and Mike Evans makes a great catch, because that's what Mike Evans does, is make these big, great contested catches at the catch point. And that's also what Benjamin St. Juice does, is give up these great contested catches at the catch point. And that led to this from Dan Quinn. Anthony, you have the bite on your side, yes? This from Dan Quinn in the postgame.
Yeah, we just rotated people around, and I think like it comes from a place of competing and knowing how to and knowing when to make the right decisions into those spaces. And so that's what we'll work on. Technique-wise, you know, like usually you ask a player, what'd you see? And if they know how to correct it already, then you're in a good spot. And that was Ben on the first touchdown to Evans. I need to turn the other way. I need to look. Okay, you got it. If you ask a player, now I don't know, that's a bigger concern. And so those guys know the things they need to work on, and that's why it did sting. And there's a lot for us to work on. But third downs, Nick, I would say collectively defensively, I wouldn't put it on one versus the other.
So there you go. I think the interesting thing about that quote with the benefit of hindsight is it just continued to be a lot of the same stuff from St. Juice all year long. And while I think he was better this year than he was last year, like he was more good more often, the lapses are still the same lapses I think that he's had. And it's just some of this will probably continue to get better throughout his career. Some of this is penalties he picks up, some of which are legit calls, and some of which are he has a reputation for being grabby and handsy, and officials call it tight on him. And some of it is just kind of going to be who he is as a player for the rest of his career, because he's not one of the best corners in the NFL. He's not the worst corner in the NFL. He's somewhere in the middle, and maybe even below the average mark. And I think that's probably fair to say. Based off of his production this year, I mean, his PFF grade is terrible, but they kill you for penalties. So, that's kind of where it is. And every time they've tried to move away from him, something has happened to bring him back, whether it's the Marshawn Lattimore injury or, other players play that they realize, actually, this is our best option. I guess we're just going to have to hold our nose with it. And I'd imagine that they probably don't bring him back next year because he's in the final year of his contract. But that was BSJ in week one. Thanks.
Number seven.
All right, number seven, I talked about Jaden. I talked about how the first half was very scramble-filled. Really, that game was scramble-filled. But one of the things that I also wrote down as a note that has come up a ton this year is his ability to make a negative into a positive was on display in this game. How sometimes he'll take on pressure and be running around, and then you're like, oh, this 5-yard sack or 10-yard sack just turned into a 20-yard gain. That's pretty cool. Also, the missed opportunities, which he's gotten better and better at all year. So this was an interesting Jaden game. And the other random thing from Jaden in this game, Anthony, remember his helmet came off twice?
Yep.
Haven't been a problem with that. They got the right helmet size for the rest of the year.
That's a plus then.
It's fantastic.
Number eight.
Shout out to the equipment staff. Terry's day, I had written down, should have been like 4 to 5 catches for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was wide open a couple times in this game. And this was early in the season, I think, before Cliff and that staff really understood, and Jaden to an extent, really understood what they had in Terry McLaurin. Where eventually in week three, they were kind of like, this guy's our best player. We've got to get him the ball. And it was like someone got in Jaden's ear and was like, look, man, I know he doesn't look like he's open. Just throw him the ball. Let's see what happens. And Terry was like, hey, guess what? I'm the best contested catch guy in the whole entire league, which statistically is true. By a number of different metrics. He's a leader in this and that and this and that. And one of them is touchdowns on, close catches, like low separation, high production. He's just excellent at that. And in this game, he also like will win deep. And this game, like there's just not enough trust between Jaden and Terry, something that clearly developed very quickly. And something that I think will be emphasized this weekend is it always is. I mean, Terry last week could have had a much bigger first half if Jaden pulls the trigger on a couple. And then Marcus obviously force feeds him in the second half, and including two of the best, like over the middle, tough, underrated, if you know type of catches you'll see on the final drive of the game. Catches a slant and a dig that he has no business catching on either, and he caught both of them.
Number eight.
Number eight on our observation list from week one. That was number eight.
Number nine.
Number nine on our observation list from week one was, I wrote, Cliff is awake. And that has been a theme this year. Like when this offense gets in a rut, and they will pull a trick out of the bag, and he will make sure, like he just will not say we're going to keep running our offense. Like he will find a trick play, he'll find a new formation, he'll find a new whatever to try to get the offense going. And so like I've forgotten that was something that goes back as far as week one, but it definitely did.
Number 10.
And unfortunately, defensive cohesion is something that has gotten a lot better since week one. The communication, not losing guys in stacks and bunches and all these types of things. It was a bit of a problem last week. Luckily, Trey Lance missed a couple of throws. But I also think part of that was Quan Martin was out, and he's one of their best communicators. So much, much harder task for Tampa's offense against this version of the Commanders defense on just simple formational stuff. But Liam Cohen is also one of the best OCs in the business this year at putting defenders in conflict. So I think that's going to be fun to watch this weekend as well. I feel like that was a good list in hindsight, Anthony.
No, it definitely was. And I think when you just look at the tape from week one and look at the tape now, it's
two totally different teams. Very, very different.
Two teams.
Tampa's different, but they're not nearly as different. And they were also a team that's now won the division 4 straight years. They've got a ton of experience. I want to talk about that factor with Melissa Stark coming up at 5 o'clock, someone who's covered a ton of playoff games in her career. But coming up next, one key to every game in Wild Card Weekend. Dan Pizzuta has the keys, and he joins us next.